Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is November the 20th. We are in Parsha Shmini towards the end of the Parsha, page 604. Beginning of the paragraph, Pasuk Lamed Test, verse 39. We're going to make a run for the end of the Parsha. I'm going to try it. Okay. Now we're still dealing with Tuma and Tara, meaning purity and impurity. We started off talking about kosher and non-kosher, then we segued into Tuma and Tara. We're continuing with Tuma and Tara, then before the end of the parasha, we will segue back into kosher and non-kosher. And as I've been mentioning to you the whole time, it is confusing because the terminology is the same. Tame and Tahar could either mean pure, impure ritually, or it could mean kosher and non-kosher. And so the terminology in the Torah is hard to follow, but that is what is going to be happening tonight. So the pasuk says, "V'chiyamus mina behema shehi lachem la'achla." If an animal that is kosher to eat dies. So until now we've talked about tuma and tara with non-kosher animals. Now we have kosher animals where an animal dies. So when an animal dies, it is not kosher to eat because it is a nevela. If it dies, it has not been shechted properly. As you know, even animals that are kosher to eat have to be slaughtered properly. If they're not slaughtered, they just die, then they are not kosher. But that's not the main point of this pasuk. The main point of this is not only that it's not kosher, but hanogea b'nivlasa yitmada arav. Anybody who touches its carcass will become tame until the evening. This is ritually impure for touching the carcass of a dead kosher animal. Meaning, when I say kosher, I mean kosher had it been slaughtered properly. If it is slaughtered properly, it is not tame. But because it was not slaughtered properly, it just died, then anybody who touches it will be tame until the evening. One who eats from its carcass shall have to wash his clothes, meaning put his clothes in the mikvah, and be tameh until evening. One who carries its carcass will have to launder his clothes, meaning put them in the mikvah, and be tameh until the evening. Our sages teach us that one who eats from a non-slaughtered kosher animal, a dead non-slaughtered kosher animal, is not tame. Although it is, of course, prohibited to do, because the animal is not kosher when it's not slaughtered, but it is not, does not make a person tame, despite the fact that this pasuk seems to imply that it does, because it says, one who eats from the carcass will become tame. Our sages explain that does not mean that one who eats will be tame. What it means is that if one carries, which is the second half of the pasuk, if one carries the amount of carcass that is fit to be eaten, meaning that the amount that will make a person tame, if one carries it, will be the size of a kebeya, which is the size of an egg, of a chicken egg. That is the size that is large enough to make a person tame. The even though it words it this way, I'm sorry, not a kebeah. I'm sorry, it's a kezias. I thought it was a kebeah. It's a kezias. It is an olive size. That is the size that if one carries it, one is tame. So although it seems to be worded in a way that sounds like one who eats it is tame, the actual meaning is that the amount that one would, that the amount that would make somebody tame for carrying it is the amount that is considered edible. And edible is a kezias. Now, this animal really is not edible for a Jew because it's not kosher, but it is still edible. The food is still edible. A non-Jew could eat it, and it's a perfectly good meat. So the amount that is would make a person tame would be a kezias worth. But eating it, if one did not touch it, nor one carried it, would not make them tame. How is it possible to eat something without touching it nor carrying it? So touching is only something that is touched with the outside of the body. Something that is touched on the inside of the body is not considered touching. So swallowing something is not considered touching from the Torah's perspective. What about carrying it? If you're eating it, aren't you carrying it? So it's not considered carrying once it is inside the cavity of the body, meaning once it is swallowed, once it is beyond the point of the throat, then it is not considered carrying. So in theory, if one would put it, one would have it in one's mouth, that would be considered carrying it. And on Shabbos, if one walks out of an area that has an Eruv, one is not allowed to have food in their mouths. That is carrying. Just like having something in your hand is carrying, something in your mouth is also carrying. However, something that is in your stomach is not carrying, right? Because once it's been swallowed, it's not considered to be an item that is being carried anymore. So here too, if someone else would pick up the nevela and put it into somebody else's mouth all the way back to the back of their throat to the point where it gets swallowed, there the swallower would not be considered touching it, nor would he be considered carrying it. And therefore he would be tahar, even though it would be non-kosher food, which is a separate problem, but it would not make the person tameh because they neither touched it halachically nor carried it halachically. So the two things that can make a person tummy would be touching it and carrying it. How do we know this? How do we know that eating it does not make a person tummy? That is because later on in the Torah, we'll get to it in a few parashios from now, we will have a case, the only case, where eating something makes a person tummy. And that will be specifically for a kosher bird that is not slaughtered properly. That's the only case where eating it makes a person tamei. So we will get to that, Mirtz Hashem, when we get to it. But over there, there's an exclusionary phrase to tell us that that's the only case where a person becomes tamei for eating something, and therefore over here, one does not become tamei for eating. Yes?
This is a nevela and not a trefa.
Correct.
Right?
This is a nevela.
Do the same rules apply to a trefa? Do we not?
A trefa could be slaughtered.
Right, and then turns out not to be
right.
A kosher animal.
No, the rules are different.
Okay.
Yeah, the rules are different for that. Pasuk Mem Aleph 41. V'chol hasheretz hasharetz al ha'aretz, any of the creepy, crawly creatures, sheketz hu lo ye'achel, it is an abomination, one shall not eat it. So what does that include? So this is again teaching us about, now we have switched back to kosher and non-kosher. With Pasuk Mem Aleph, verse 41, we move away from Tuma and Tahara and back to the concept of kosher and non-kosher. Now we've already covered kosher and non-kosher animals, split hooves, chew their cud. We covered kosher and non-kosher fish, fin scales. We covered kosher and non-kosher birds. We covered kosher and non-kosher grasshoppers. Now, we're going to cover a list of things that are not kosher. There is no kosher version of the ones we're about to list. And these are things that have not been included in the previous categories. So these are creepy, crawly creatures, which we'll see what they include in a moment, insects and things of that nature, and they are not kosher. One may not eat them. But look at this first one that it includes in Pasuk Mem Beis 42. Kol holeich al gachon. Anything that goes upon, what does it say here?
Belly.
On its belly. This refers to a snake. From the previous discussions in the Torah, one may not have known that a snake is not kosher. Because a snake is not a typical animal. It doesn't walk on four legs. It doesn't fit with regular animals. It doesn't fit with birds. It doesn't fit with fish. So one may have thought that a snake is kosher. Says the Torah that kol holech al gachon, anything that goes upon its belly, is not kosher. And, interestingly enough, that vav, that letter vav in the word gachon, is the middle of the Torah in letters. It is the middle letter of the Torah. The vav of the word gachon. V'chol holech al arba, and anything that goes on four legs, it's not referring to a large animal, it's referring to a tiny insect. Ad kol marbe raglayim, no matter how many feet it has, as Rashi here says, if you'd like to look at the Rashi, he brings a case which he uses the old French word, centipede. So that is also not going to be kosher. L'chol hasheretz hasharetz al ha'aretz, for all these things that they say team, that crawls along the ground. Lo so chalum, you shall not eat them, ki sheketz heim, for they are an abomination, they are disgusting. Al teshak tzuas nafsho seichem b'chol hasheretz hasharetz, do not make your souls abominable with all these abominable creatures. Velosi tamu bahem, do not become tamei with them. Tamei here means having eaten non-kosher food. These things don't make a person ritually impure. But don't make yourselves impure by eating non-kosher foods. V'nit meisem bam, and you shall become tamei with them. Here the Torah is using the word tamei in a sense that has not been used until now. It doesn't mean ritually impure. It doesn't mean non-kosher. It means that if a Jewish person eats these creepy crawly creatures, that person has become not ritually impure, but spiritually impure. That person has become an impure person. Not that they can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, but they become an impure person because they eat bugs. And eating bugs makes a person impure spiritually. It's a spiritual impurity to eat bugs. Which is why you will find over here several times the Torah says not to eat bugs. The Gemara says in Masachas Makos, in Tractate Makos, if one eats different types of bugs, one can violate, for each bug, one can violate five different prohibitions for eating one bug. One bug can be five prohibitions. One bug could be, a different type of bug could be six prohibitions. Depending on the type of bug, it could be five or six prohibitions just for one little bug.
Yeah.
If someone eats vegetables without checking them or cleaning them for bugs, one can eat dozens of bugs, which are in the vegetables. And for each one, it's five or six separate prohibitions. If one bites into a piece of pork, for every kezias, for every olives amount, it's only one prohibition.
Sure.
But for all the little bugs, even the very, very tiny bugs that you can barely see in the vegetables, if one eats those, every single one is another five or six prohibitions. That is the reason why one has to be very, very careful with bugs. And that is the primary reason why you want to be careful whose house you eat in. The primary reason to be careful about where you eat is not where they buy their meat. Because most people in a Jewish community with a kosher store nearby are going to buy kosher meat. The primary thing that is concerning about eating in people's homes are those who are not careful with checking their vegetables for bugs. Because if you don't check your vegetables for bugs, then with every bite of salad, there can be multiple averos, multiple prohibitions over and over and over again with every bite of salad. It is a very, very serious issue. And it is really the primary thing that distinguishes a real kosher home from a home that is only trying to be kosher but hasn't really made it, is the issue of checking for bugs. It's not a small issue. It's a very, very big issue, and one has to be careful with bugs. There are all kinds of websites available to see which vegetables need to be checked, which vegetables do not need to be checked. Corn on the cob does not need to be checked for bugs. But romaine lettuce absolutely has to be checked for bugs. And these are the big issues when it comes to kosher and non-kosher. Restaurants are big problems when it comes to this. This is one of the biggest things with restaurants. And one of the biggest reasons why they need somebody there is the bug checking. With all of the garnish and all the vegetables they use for their meals, whether it's a meat or dairy or whatever it is, they use vegetables, they use lettuce, they use whatever it is, and they need to be checked. And this is a major, major issue in these places. People who think that if they go to a vegan restaurant that they are not eating anything non-kosher, it couldn't be further from the truth. Vegan restaurants are replete full of bugs in the vegetables. The bugs that we're talking about are not bugs that the FDA cares about. They're tiny, tiny little bugs that can barely be seen, but they can be seen, but they're very, very small. The FDA could not care less if they're in your food. They're perfectly fine for the FDA to be in your food, and all restaurants have them unless there is a hashgacha. Hey, there's a hechsher that is specifically there to make sure that there are no bugs in the food. Yes?
What do you do if you do eat a bug? Eating the vegetables and checking that you're doing all you can. But in the country, we used to go into, you know, wherever you used to go, the gnats, you would walk, you would drive, and you would get them, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes you can get a mouthful of bugs.
You spit them out.
And it was disgusting. Yeah. You'd spit it out, and you'd do the best.
The best you can.
What do you do?
You spit them out. Okay, you know, spit them out.
So there's nothing.
No, there's nothing, you know.
What about the bugs that you can't see?
If you can't see them, if they're really invisible to the naked eye, then they're not
a
problem.
They are bugs.
Yeah, The ones that you cannot see, there are microscopic bugs, those are not a problem.
Okay.
It's only they have to be able to be seen by the naked eye. However, seen by the naked eye does not mean seen with a cursory glance. It means when one looks carefully, and one who has decent vision, I do not have decent vision, I can't see the bugs even if I look carefully. But that doesn't make it kosher.
But you see them on white. Usually.
Yeah, someone. Yeah,
right.
So one needs to be careful with bugs. It is a major issue with kosher and non-kosher. There was a time. When I was growing up, it was a surprise to a lot of kosher consumers that they needed to be careful with bugs, because when they were growing up, it wasn't a problem and they did not need to be careful with bugs. That's because when they were growing up, it was the age of pesticides. Of what was it?
DDT,
right. And when those pesticides were in use, then it's true, there was no bug checking necessary. There are a lot of other problems, but there, no bug there was no bug checking necessary because nothing survived that stuff.
But couldn't there have been dead bugs under that
show? Usually not. Usually not. Usually once they've gone through the process, usually they don't get that far. They don't fester as much. The problem today is that because we don't use such strong pesticides, there can be a lot of bugs. Okay. And then they don't come off with regular washing. Yeah.
I don't remember where I heard, but they said if you're having broccoli, but you put it in the blender and then you get a chop bug, that's okay.
So they're a pureed bug, if it's absolutely pureed, may be okay. But the question is whether you're allowed to do that on purpose. And so once it has been pureed, it may be okay. It's not so simple to do that.
Oh, right. If you see bugs, you know you're not going to do it. But if you've cleaned and done the best you can,
so you got to look on the.
You put it. You know.
You got to first check see how to check for those bugs. Yeah.
They can be in rice, not only in vegetables.
They can be in rice. It's less of an issue. It's the most common issues that we have today are fresh, green, leafy vegetables. The ones that the health people tell you say you're supposed to eat a lot of.
What about putting it in salt water or something?
I don't believe a salt water does it. You have to look on the websites talk about it. The Starkey talks about it, and the OU talks about it. All the websites discuss how to get rid of the bugs. I don't think salt water does it. Like a soapy solution might do it. Strawberries can be a problem. There's a lot of different things.
I was taught salt water and vinegar. You know, you keep rinsing it until you find nothing.
Yeah.
In it.
Again, since I can't see the bugs, I'm not the one who does it in my house. So you have to. Right. Okay. Memdalat 44. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, for I am Hashem your God. V'hiskadishtem v'yisem kedoshim. You shall make yourselves sanctified, and you will be sanctified. Ki kadosh ani, for I am sanctified. V'lo sitamu es nafshoseichem. You shall not make your souls impure. B'chol hasheretz haromeis ala aretz, with all the abominations that creep along the ground. Now, there is a dispensation for some bugs. The problem is that we consumers, once we get them in the store, it's impossible to know whether they fit this category or not. In theory, a bug that was born inside of a vegetable and never emerged out of the vegetable, it was always inside of the vegetable, and that is consumed, that would not be considered eating a bug. That bug is not yet usur. It does not become prohibited until it emerges from the vegetable. The problem is, there's no way to know when you get them in the store whether they started inside or they were started outside and went inside. You just don't know, and therefore we have to presume that all the bugs are no good. But in theory, I guess on a farm one may be able to tell, in theory there are situations where it would be okay and one would not need to get rid of the bugs that are deep inside of a vegetable. Pasuk Mem Hey, verse 45, Ki ani Hashem hamale eschem eretz Mitzrayim, for I am God who brought you up from the land of Egypt, lios v'chem le'elokim, to be for you as a God, v'yisem kedoshim, you shall be sanctified, ki kadosh ani, for I am sanctified. There are many times in the Chumash when the Torah says, I am Hashem hamotzi eschem me'eretz Mitzrayim, that takes you out or took you out of the land of Egypt. There are several times in the Torah that it says that. This is the only place in the Torah where it says, I am God hamala eschem me'eretz Mitzrayim, who brings you up from the land of Egypt. Not just took you out, but brings you up from the land of Egypt. Our sages learn from here that this not eating bugs is so significant that Hashem is saying that had I not taken you out of Egypt, only to refrain from eating bugs, if that was the only reason why I took you out of Egypt, that would have been a mala, that would have been an elevation for you. Just to get you not to eat bugs, that in and of itself would have been enough of a reason to get you out of Egypt. Even had I not given you any other part of the Torah, no Shabbos, no other halachos of kashrus, nothing else. If I just would have taken you out so that you wouldn't eat bugs, that would have elevated you to be a greater nation. Because all the nations of the world eat bugs. Again, even clean Western culture eats bugs. They eat bugs all the time. And we are the only ones who are careful not to eat bugs. And that is a mala, that is an elevation for us Jews. Memvav 46. Zos Torah HaBehema V'Ha'Of. This is the law of the animals and the birds. V'chol Nefesh HaChaya, and all the wild animals. Haromes Es Bamayim, that team in the water. U'l'chol Nefesh HaSharetz Es HaVaretz, and all souls that creep along the ground. So these are the laws of all of these animals, all of these creatures, when it comes to consumption and when it comes to becoming Tamei and becoming Tahar. Now the last pasuk tells us lehavdil bein tamei uvein tahar, to distinguish between that which is tamei and that which is tahar, uvein chaya necheles, between the creatures that one can eat, uvein chaya shelo seyachel, and between creatures that one that shall not be eaten. Our sages say on this that does the Torah here need to emphasize the difference between creatures that can be eaten and cannot be eaten? Does the Torah need to emphasize the difference between a cow and a pig? It's obvious what the difference is between a cow and a pig. You look at it, you can see one is a cow, one is a pig. So our sages derive from here that one needs to be an expert. One needs to know the difference. To be a learned Jew means to know the difference even in the subtleties of kosher and non-kosher. So there are two examples given here in Rashi. One is to know the difference between when an animal was slaughtered, whether the trachea and the esophagus were slaughtered more than 50% through. In order for the slaughtering to be kosher, it has to be that the slaughtering, the shechita, cuts more than 50% of both the trachea and the esophagus. If it's less than 50% of the trachea and the esophagus, then it is not kosher. One has to know the difference between a properly slaughtered animal and an improperly slaughtered animal. Another example brought in Rashi is that a case where, really, Dr. Fari brought this up before, that we have a concept of trefa, which we haven't even discussed really in detail yet. We had it back in Parshas Mishpatim, but we haven't discussed it here at all. Trefa means an animal that is kosher, that was slaughtered properly, but then one discovers a defect in the animal. A hole in the lung, a hole in the brain, a hole in the heart. Those are things that make the meat not kosher. It's a trefa, not kosher. However, those laws of trefa are subtle, because there can be a situation where there is an abrasion, and it is subtle whether that abrasion renders the animal a trefa or does not render the animal a trefa. And we are expected to be bekim, to be experts in that as well. Now, practically speaking, and this is true throughout the ages, this is not just a modern problem, practically speaking, it is difficult for everybody to be an expert in what renders an animal a trefa and what renders the animal a shechita, slaughtering, a good slaughtering or a bad slaughtering. We have people who are trained in slaughtering, people who are trained to check for trefa, and those are the ones that can tell the difference between whether the animal is slaughtered properly or improperly, or whether the animal is a trefa or not a trefa. So the Torah here means that to be learned, one needs to know the difference. The fact of the matter is, you can't know everything. Moshe Rabbeinu knew everything, but most people are going to have some gaps in their knowledge. But we need to empower people who will be bekiyim, who will be experts in these things. There have to be people among the Jewish people who are experts in the slaughtering, to know that it is 100% okay, and in the concept of trefa, the concept of knowing whether the animal is a viable animal or not. It happens to be that the way it works in a slaughterhouse today, the shochet, the one who slaughters the animals, is trained in both of these things. They are trained, first of all, how to slaughter properly and how to check after they slaughter to make sure that it was done correctly. And they're also trained in how to check for trefos, for the most common types of defects in the animal. One does not have to check for defects that are highly uncommon. A hole in the brain is a very uncommon defect and would likely be noticeable in the live animal. Now, you wouldn't see the hole in the brain, but you'd notice a problem, I assume, with the live animal if it actually had a hole in its brain. Whereas a tiny hole in the lung is not so uncommon. It actually is fairly common, even in a healthy animal. There are in an adult cow, it is fairly common to find holes in the lung, or at least holes that have been covered up by some sort of scab, and that can make the animal, or makes the animal possibly a trefa. So the shochtim, the slaughterers, are trained in how to check for these things. When I went to the slaughterhouse, when I was learning about shechita, so when I watched them do the checking the lungs after slaughter, so one way they check the lungs is an external check, which means that they simply run their hands over the lungs to see if they feel any problem with the lung. And then what they do in certain cases, especially with adult cows, is when after the animal has been cut up, they remove the lung and they actually use a machine to blow the lung up with air. It blows up like a balloon. Then they submerge it in liquid, in water. And after they submerge it in water, they wait to see if any bubbles rise to the surface. If bubbles start to rise to the surface, that indicates that there is a hole, although it's small, a hole in the lung. So that is one of the methods used to check the lungs for trefa. So we are required to have experts who can check both the shechita process, the trefa process, and to know all about bugs, to know all about the animals, what's kosher, what's not kosher. We do that today with our kashrus organizations, that we have them in order to make sure that what we are eating is kosher. And every Jewish community, right now it's ubiquitous. Every Jewish community has a good kosher, a kashrus organization in town.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.